What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin, and I am joined this week, as I am every week, by my good friend, Mr. Gerald Goodridge. And I have to say, we've been slacking a bit here.
Just a little bit.
There are zero post-credit scenes in our podcast. Zero. And Guardians of the Galaxy, they managed five post-credit scenes. We are five post-credit scenes behind Guardian of the Galaxy. How do you sleep at night?
Well, if we had Howard the Duck to pull on, then I feel like we'd have better post-credit scenes. But, you know, at some point, we just have to stop the pod. Because if we kept the conversation going after the podcast, we'd be talking about, like, our real lives, and nobody really cares about that.
First of all, people very much care about real lives, if the housewives are any indication. And secondly, I think that we're just the two laziest people on earth. We should be like an outtake show. Do you think that would outtakes for the post credit scene? Is that what we're gonna do? Take the Guardians of the Galaxy mold, or we could just get a drop of Vin Diesel saying "I am Groot" as many times as we want to put it in there.
If we could get Vin Diesel doing "I am Groot" interspliced with lines from one of the Fast movies, whether it's or 7 or 65.
Just "I am Groot" and family just linked together
all the way together. What if he says what if Fast 9 he just says "I am family" the entire time?
It would probably improve the dialogue of the Fast and Furious movies.
I'd be okay with it.
Have you seen the new one yet? No, you have a child. You haven't seen it.
No,
I didn't go and see it either. That's one of those I'm going to wait for HBO specials, I think.
Apparently we're the only two people that haven't, since it's now the largest opening it overtook The Force Awakens as the largest opening in history.
Largest world opening.
Yes.
Very important. Didn't do so hot at the American box office, or at least as hot as people thought. But anyway, that's diving a little bit too deep into my fantasy movie league. We'll move off that, and we'll get to something, another movie that's going to have a giant opening, and that is Deadpool 2, which last week, just after we got done recording last week, they came out and announced who is going to play Cable, this long-running mystery, this long-running saga. It is going to be, as was speculated about before, Josh Brolin. It's not going to be Ron Perlman. It's not going to be Michael Shannon. That's very disappointing for me on multiple levels, but I have to say, If it's not going to be one of those two guys, I think that Brolin's a pretty good option. What do you think?
So I'm not mad about Josh Brolin. I mean, James Brolin would have been fun, but I haven't seen Brolin do anything really of substance in the comic book world. I mean, he's a heck of an actor. He's done a lot of great things, but as far as comic book roles go, I don't really know what he's doing. Granted, you know, Cable's going to be the straight man to Deadpool's kind of zany antics. So if you bring some, was it Llewellyn Moss from?
Yeah.
From No Country for Old Men, then I think he'll be great. You know, he's got that grizzled thing down. He's got that hard edge to him. I've never seen him with frosted temples, so that'll be something new to see. But, you know, overall, he's a good actor, so I can't really be mad. You know, good actors doing, you know, good things. He seems to have a sense of humor, which I think you'll need. Again, he's going to be more of the straight man in this film. But I'm not upset about it. It's just, you know, I want to see Ron Perlman do everything, because Hellboy and Hellboy 2 are some of my favorite films of all time. So, you know, you got that going for you. But overall, can't be mad about Brolin.
Yeah, you don't really know, because, I mean, he is Thanos, but, what, we've seen him for 4 minutes of movie time, right? So, like, it's not like we know what he's going to be. He was in a movie in, I think, 2015 called Cesario, which was awesome. They're actually coming out with a sequel this year called, I think it's like Soledad or something like that. It looks like it's going to be good. Same cast. Emily Blunt, I don't think, is in it, but same cast. So if you haven't seen Cesario, I very well recommend you do that. So yeah, so he has that kind of, as he's gotten older, Gangster Squad's a good example, even though it's a terrible movie. He's gotten kind of that grizzled, gruff kind of thing down, and so that's probably going to play well as Cable. But I guess the question is, I mean, who else in the Marvel Universe is he going to play? I know that this is a Fox production and not the Marvel, but who else do we think he's going to play? I think he'd be good as the Thing, right? In the future Fantastic Four, inevitable Fantastic Four reboot they're going to try. I think that would work out pretty good. So who else do you think, now that he's Thanos and now that he's Cable, who else is he going to take over, you think?
I think he could be the Red Hulk if we didn't have a, a Commander Ross. I think anybody that's just kind of bulking and angry.
He might be an interesting Norman Osborn, right?
He could be. He could be. He does that, like, kind of silent seething thing that I could see him do. You know, the Rhino would be great, you know, Spider-Man villain.
Because obviously he's just going to take every villainous, or I guess Cable's not a villain. He's going to take every kind of angry part. That's just going to be his career from now on. So I like it. I know that you and I are disappointed. Michael Shannon, I went back and watched him reading the letter again today just because that's the fact that he didn't win an award for that, for reading the sorority letter, is just, it's, I don't know what award he's win. They should have just made up an award for it because that was just comedy gold. So I'm upset, but I think that Brolin's good. Let's move on to something that neither of us are upset about, and that's a James Gunn in a lengthy Facebook post. I certainly did not read it all. It seemed like it was heartfelt. Said that he, in fact, is going to be writing and directing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Obviously, the reviews that have come in have been almost all positive for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I'm looking forward to it. So this is, I think, good news, and I think we're both going to agree on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the bigger news is that there's going to be a Guardians 3. I mean, it was kind of a foregone conclusion going into it, you know, especially, again, with the positive buzz. But, you know, the fact that I think Gunn's sense of humor, his kind of quirkiness, his directing style, that kind of technicolor, zany, but still, it's got that mix of, like, gritty but bright that he does so well. So he is a good chunk of why Guardians is successful. His sense of humor, his directing style, his ability to kind of let these funny, talented people be funny and talented, to me is a big, big deal. And so I like it. I'm excited to see more. You know, Guardians is one of the brighter spots in a galaxy or a cinematic universe full of fairly bright movies. You know, overall, even the bad movies are still pretty good. Yeah. So the fact that Guardians was an unexpected joy, and that Guardians 2 seems to be shaping up to be something and more of an expected joy, I guess, is good for me to see him staying with the franchise. And it means that I think Guardians 2 is going to be successful, not just from a financial standpoint or a quality standpoint, but he's happy with the product that he's putting out.
And I think that it's good for the Marvel Universe, you know, as a whole. We saw when we talked about the Thor trailer that it was basically just a Guardians trailer. I think that the success of that particular part of the universe has, and specifically Gunn's success, has caused them to transition a little bit and move into a different direction a little bit. And the fact that he's still going to be around and helping them with that, I think that that's even if he's not involved in those specific movies, right? I think that his influence is going to shine through. And so I agree. I think it's ultimately a great thing for everybody. But let's get on to the meat and potatoes. Let's get on to the point where I'm just going to sit back and let you talk. And that is that over the weekend, there was Star Wars Celebration. We talked about it last week. The trailer came. We knew that the trailer was going to come. Nobody had to leak it. They just put it out there in the live panel. That was good. They also released a Battlefront 2 trailer. A lot to get to. Let's start with Battlefront 2 because I think I'm oddly more excited about that than I am about Empire Strikes Back Part 2. So let's talk about Battlefront 2. And the trailer of it, if you haven't found it, it's in the show notes. Go and look at it. It's an interesting trailer. They're going to have a single-player mission. I have some thoughts about that. I'm not so sure about the way they're approaching it, but they needed a single-player mission. That's for sure. Like all other games that I've played that are multiplayer only, the first Battlefront got stale pretty quickly. And so that campaign is very important. But kind of what are your just opening thoughts on Battlefront 2?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me watching the panel, you know, I watched the full panel because I'm a nerd and I have to, you know, you stay quiet when your kid is sleeping when you have a, you know, an infant. So I watched the full panel, and the things that jump out to me is that all of the complaints that the community and the fans had, they seem to be addressing or at least very cognizant of. So the lack of a single player campaign, kind of like you said, the rinse and repeat nature of it. Like you play these games to have different experiences and have cool experiences, and you play the same couple of game modes on the couple of same maps. You know, you play Jakku, you play Endor, you play Hoth, and that's pretty much it. Those are really what you do. You know, they added Cloud City and the Death Star later on as DLC. But the fact that they're bringing in, you know, in multiplayer, multiple eras, so they're going to bring in prequels, original trilogy, and the sequel trilogy.
And they're not running away from the prequels like the new movies are doing. They're going to go back in there, and you're going to get. I mean, Darth Maul is on the cover,
yeah.
which is cool because he was an underserved character. He's an interesting character who was very much underserved. What did you say? One line in the entire Phantom Menace. So yeah. he was very underserved. And so yeah, so they're not running away from it, which I think is cool because those movies were bad, but there was some interesting stuff in there.
Well, and I think it's a two-pronged attack because the original Battlefront 2, part of what made that great was a lot of the prequel stuff. A lot of your more fun Jedi battles, you know, your hero fights were the prequel era stuff. And the other reason why I think that they're not shying away is that the prequel era has seen a resurgence recently because of Reddit. Reddit has this prequel memes thing that's happening that everybody is just latching onto. And so the prequels are back in a lot of the zeitgeist for people that are going to buy this game and are going to pre-order this game. But, you know, the other thing that they hit on a lot during this panel is space battles. That's another thing that people really wanted to see. You know, one of my this was my go-to because, you know, I'm not very good at shooters, but somehow I was really good at Battlefront 2. And my go-to was always hop in an X-Wing or hop in a TIE fighter. Fly to the Star Destroyer or the Nebulon frigate for the other team, get out of it, clear out their hangar, and destroy it from the inside. That was always my thing. And so I missed that in Battlefront. And so they said that, you know, the space battle is going to be a really significant part of the multiplayer experience. Criterion Games is the group that's really focusing on the space battle piece of the multiplayer, and they're the ones that actually developed a really well-received VR X-Wing thing that came out a couple of months back. They're adding in greater mechanics as far as, you know, shooters and leveling go for multiplayer. You know, you're going to have your classes that you level up and your weapons that you level up and, you know, different pilots and different
And that comes from DICE. Yeah, that comes from DICE because that's Battlefield, which is, in my estimation, the best shooter going right now. Mm-hmm. Battlefield 1 is great. It's a great shooter. Doesn't have a single player. Does get a little stale, but they still manage to make it work. And that's why they brought in DICE, because DICE knows what they're doing when it comes to multiplayer. And I think it's going to be maybe more like the Battlefield feel to it this time in the multiplayer, which I think is only a good thing.
For sure. And you know, switching gears to the single player campaign, now you had your reservations with it, but my, like, the thing that I love about the Disney move, you know, people can say what they want about Disney wiping out the old canon. Guys, if you're still, like, the books still exist. They didn't burn them in mass. You can still read them. And also, 70% of them were terrible. Like, yes, they were just not good. But the thing I really love, and this is, I think, going to be an asset to this game, is that the single-player campaign is a fully canon, fully realized, fully integrated piece of the Star Wars universe. So they've been working with Pablo Hidalgo and Leland Cheek, kind of the two chief members of the Lucas Story Group. They got one of the writers for Spec Ops The Line, which if you look at any video game publication has one of the best campaign modes of the last probably 5 or 10 years. A newcomer, Mitch Dyer, he was on a couple of podcasts I listened to, which is really weird that he never said what he was doing and it's this big Star Wars deal. But the plot of it to me is really intriguing, because and not necessarily because of the X's and O's of it, but the way that the executive from Motive Studios, the group that's doing the single player campaign, the way that they sold it is the questions that they asked were, you know, we see everything from the perspective of the rebels. We see everything from the perspective of, the Empire's bad, the rebels are good, there's no middle ground. And that is not the reality. And so they're wanting to tell a story from the vantage point of one of the heroes of the Empire, you know, and they asked the question, this is really intriguing, you know, something I didn't thought of, what would it be like to be on the ground of Endor and look up and see everything that you pinned your entire life's beliefs on go up in smoke? And that's the story they're telling is, you know, there's this Commando of the Infernal Squadron, which, side note, female protagonist in a first-person shooter, hey, what's now up?
Yeah, that's good.
You know, so she's a special forces commando, you know, worked again in conjunction with Lucasfilm to create it. And so I think it's going to be, it's a good idea. I think it's really cool to see it. And it's going to span 30 years is this story. They say it's going to follow her from the end of Return of the Jedi to The Force Awakens, which I think is really, really cool.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think that part of it is one of the parts that I went, well, that's a really good idea, because that seems like an area that's ripe for story mining that we haven't really delved into. What happened between, where did the First Order come from, right?
Absolutely.
We haven't really dove into that very much. And so I agree with that completely. I think it's a really rich area to mine.
For sure. And it seems like they're really focusing on, you know, that the shades of gray, which I love. I think, you know, Star Wars, in, you know, for good or bad, has always been this very binary, black and white, you know, good and bad, heroes versus villains thing. And, you know, whether it's the RPG, the role-playing games that we talked about last week in my Don't Sleep, or whether it's on, you know, Rebels, or whether it's, you know, in this, or even some of the new books, you know, they're exploring these shades of gray that happen in this time of uncertainty. And, you know, they like you said, they really haven't explored it. You've got the, you know, the Aftermath trilogy that does a bit of that. You've got Bloodlines that does a little bit of it. But outside of that, they really haven't explored, you know, what happened? What was this universe? How did the Empire kind of morph into the First Order? And I think that is interesting to me. And see it from the inside, from this perspective of somebody who isn't a malicious dictator. They're not someone who's trying to enslave the youth. They think they're doing the right thing. They're serving their government. They're serving the government that they grew up in. So I really think that perspective is super cool and something that we haven't seen yet in Star Wars.
Well, I think you laid out what the problem with that perspective is, though, is that previously in Star Wars, there has been a very clear line drawn between good and evil. And I think it might be difficult but for a mass appeal game to be played through the Empire's perspective, because you're going to have to go if you're playing it through the Empire's perspective, you're then going to have to go and do things as the Empire. You're going to have to kill Ewoks, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have to go through, and so while there might be some fun in that, and I always do an evil Fallout playthrough, so I'm not going to say that I'm above that. I don't know if it has the mass appeal, and I kind of liken it to a World War II game. Would you ever play a World War II game in which you're the Nazis? Would you do that? It doesn't seem like something I'm interested in doing. Would you like to play Gears of War as the Locust? Like, would you like to play Halo as the Covenant? Like, it doesn't really make sense to me. And I know that there have been other Star Wars games like The Force Unleashed where you had that option, right? But you also had the option to join CODA and be on the light side as well. And I would wager that most people, especially their first playthrough, chose that option, because if you're ingrained in the Star Wars universe, there is no gray. There is a good side that is literally called the light side, and then there is a bad side, which is literally called the dark side. There is no nuance. That's one of the big problems with Star Wars, I would agree with you. But if we're, what now, 40 years into this, yeah, we're going to try to introduce gray into it, and we're just going to expect people to accept it? Maybe that's true, and I think a lot of people will. I think you and I will, because I think I find it interesting. I agree with you. I just don't know on a mass appeal level if people are going to be super interested in playing as essentially the Nazis. And that's kind of something that I don't really know how well it's going to work out.
Well, it's hard to argue against the Nazi argument, Ray. So you kind of painted me into a corner on that.
But you don't understand why that comparison is apt, right?
No, 100%. No, the Empire has always been likened to the Nazis. I mean, stormtroopers, SS, yeah, like it's exactly. the uniforms, the high leather boots. Now I'm with you. I get that imagery, but I think, you know, for me, that we'll hit on this more when we talk about the Last Jedi trailer, but that shades of gray is really what this new Star Wars, you know, post Return of the Jedi universe is. You know, I'm listening right now through the Aftermath trilogy, and it follows a group of rebel agents that their entire job is basically to hunt out and kill Imperial war criminals.
Yeah.
Like, that is their thing. Like, that is what they do. And, you know, they don't ever actually kill them, but that's like their mission. They end up, you know, capturing them, and they die in other ways. But, you know, sure. that's what they're exploring currently in the Star Wars canon. And so I think, you know, if my initial thought was, well, Iden Verso, this protagonist, will probably end up flipping to the resistance or whatever. And I'd be really disappointed if they did that. But I think if they write this in a smart way and they show you that, she's not a, I don't even know how to say it, but she's like, she's doing the wrong, not even the air quotes wrong things for the right reasons. Like she believes in the ideology. She believes in what they do. Cause the average Imperial person was not trying to enslave the galaxy. They were just trying to serve the government that they knew. And something that was really interesting that came out of this panel, is that Christy Golden, who's writing the novelization, who's giving some of the backstory of this character, says like, her home planet is one of the only planets that willingly gave itself to the Empire. And so that is an interesting concept for me as well. I didn't read the first Battlefront book because why? There wasn't a story to the game. But I will read this. Christy Golden is kind of your go-to for any sort of licensed good novelization. She's the gold standard if you read any sort of World of Warcraft books.
Is that a pun?
It wasn't, but I wish it had been. It wasn't an intentional pun, at least. So that is intriguing to me. It's just seeing the other side of this coin, because there are good people that were just, we're going along with what our government says, and they're not doing it maliciously. They're doing it because they think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, just like the Nazis. So let's get on to
thanks, Ray.
So let's get on to The Last Jedi, which I did watch a lot of that panel, simply because Mark Hamill, I texted you this earlier, he was born to play legendary characters because he's so graceful. He's so cool under pressure. He handles everything in stride. Like, he seems like he's just like, no matter where you see Mark Hamill, he sees like he's just at a bar talking to his friends, like just holding court in the back corner. It's just, it's amazing. So I wanted to see him. I always love watching him, and it's impressive to watch him on the panel. So I did watch a lot of this one, and Josh Gad's been, his Instagram was really fun about 3 months ago. You can probably go back and find some of those videos. He and Daisy Ridley were doing Murder on the Orient Express, which is going to be coming out in a year or so. And so they were doing it together, and he would just randomly ask her questions on Instagram, like make her come to the trailer and ask her questions. It was great, so go watch that for sure. So yeah, I was interested in this panel, and there was some interesting stuff to come out of here, not least of which, obviously, the trailer, which I guess is what we should talk about first. So what kind of your first impressions out of that trailer?
Well, the first off, the way that they did the trailer was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because Rian Johnson, the director, was like, and we've got a poster. And everyone was like, oh, that's cool. And then he left the stage and came back like, I don't even, like Gene Simmons on the encore, screaming, of course there's a trailer. And they called this a teaser, but it was like, almost 3 minutes of content, which is fantastic. And it falls under our good trailer analysis, right? Where they show you just enough to give you more questions. But first of all, Luke gets to talk in this, so that's a positive.
That's moving in the right direction, yeah.
Yep. It confirms a lot of the rumors that this movie is going to pick up immediately after the end of The Force Awakens, which is breaking the trend of Star Wars having, a couple of year gap between them. But you can't really gloss over that big moment of you hit.
As Hamill said, it was literally a cliffhanger. He was literally standing on the side of a cliff.
Yeah, it's a literal cliffhanger. So you see Rey is going to be going through Jedi training on a mountain, having some sort of Karate Kid moment.
With Loda, as I'm calling him.
Loda? Okay.
or Yuke.
Yuke sounds like a Canadian, so let's go Loda.
Loda?
Now, the big thing for me is there are a lot of questions that I'm really excited to see. The first of which is that bookshelf. It took me a while to figure out that it was a bookshelf.
Yeah, it was really weird shot of it when it came on. My brain couldn't quite work out, what the dimensions of what I was looking at.
Yeah. Well, the first three times I watched it, I was watching it on my phone. So it was, I have the plus. So it's still a decent sized screen, but I watched it on my TV with my wife when I got home. And I was like, oh, it's a bookshelf in a tree root is what it is. And that to me is the most intriguing thing. One of the most intriguing things about it is, they said in The Force Awakens that Luke has retreated to study the old Jedi Order. And so you saw the cover of a book, looks like some sort of journal that has the Jedi symbol on it. And then you see this bookshelf with some really ancient tomes on it. And one of the things, one of the rumors, and one of the things that I initially thought of is one of these the Book of the Wills? Because the Book of the Wills is basically the Bible of the Star Wars universe. It was in George's original treatment of the Star Wars films. If you go out and look up the Star Wars, there's a really cool graphic novel that is based off of his original manuscript. It's terrible. but you know, is one of these, the Book of the Wills, and they've been really leaning into, this deeper understanding of the Force throughout, you know, this new canon, this new era. You know, the novelization of The Force Awakens actually opens with a chapter and verse from the Book of the Wills. And it talks about the light and the dark being balanced in the gray. And then you watch Rebels and you've got a character called Bendu, which is another allusion to George's original theory of the Force, where the Jedi are called the Jedi Bendu, which is a terrible name. I'm glad they dropped the Bendu part. But his whole thing, you know, he's talking to, spoilers for season 3 of Rebels, you know, Kanan, this Jedi, he's talking to him, and he says to him, you have a narrow understanding of the Force.
He basically says, I'm above your petty light and dark side, your petty Jedi and Sith. I'm above all of this.
Yeah, he called the Asherah and the Bogan is what they call it. And so that, to me, it just continues the trend of, like, they're talking about this gray area. You know, they and then you get to the end of the trailer and Luke drops that kind of almost atomic bomb of a line that the Jedi must end.
Ryan Johnson has said that Last Jedi is not plural. He thinks it's a dumb question, but he said it is singular, which Luke raises some questions about some of the translations, but he says that it's singular, which means that that's Luke. Luke is the Last Jedi, which means that Rey is not. And if Finn is Force sensitive, which they kind of have pointed to and not pointed to, he's not as well. So this is you're kind of dancing around the subject. So I'm going to ask the question, is she a great Jedi? Is she the first kind of canon one? I mean, kind of, Because Liam Neeson, I just lost his name.
Qui-Gon.
They kind of dance around him being something, right? If we go back in time, there are some other ones. Is that what they're going to?
Yes, 100%. I was building to it. No, you're fine. You're fine. I could ramble about this for days. The whole point of the prequel trilogy was to show that the dogmatic understanding of the Force that the Jedi have is the whole reason why the galaxy ended up the way it did. There's no darkness, there's only light, there's no emotion, there's no attachment, there's no love. That is an inherently flawed ideology, and that is the entire reason why Anakin falls and is not the chosen one, why he cannot bring balance to the Force. You know, that's what that verse in the Book of the Wills talks about, is that there's only balance in the gray. And so that is what Rey is going to be. Luke spent years rebuilding the Jedi Order in the vein of the old Jedi Order and lost his star pupil because he forced him to deny his rights. This is just me kind of speculating now. Deny his emotions, deny his feelings. I would imagine that just like Anakin was seduced by the loss of a loved one, I'm going to go ahead and assume that Snoke played on Ben Solo, there you go, his fears of losing his mother or his father, maybe. Honestly, based on the end of The Force Awakens, I would assume it's probably his fear of his loss of his father and his father's absence and him not being able to deal with those emotions. And so he played off of that.
You're telling me Kylo Ren can't properly deal with his emotions?
You know, the temper tantrums in the middle of the film.
Hold on a second.
So mind that... Yeah, so Luke then goes, he realizes, okay, there's a flaw in what I'm doing. Because Luke really was I don't really think Luke, if you look at it truly, is the first gray Jedi, or the first, an actual Jedi. I think Luke is kind of a prototype. He's like a light gray Jedi, maybe like an off-white Jedi. Because when you look at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, he chokes out those Gamorrean guards using the Force.
Yeah.
And he's unafraid to kill if he has to. You know, he tells Jabba, like, I will end you.
Yeah.
So Luke kind of realizes that, but he tries and tries and tries to live up to this standard of the light side. And you see him, you see that there's a really beautiful shot in the trailer of him falling to his knees, looking at his temple burning. And so he retreats to Ahch-To and studies the old Jedi Order and realizes this is flawed. And so that's what I think that line means, is that he is going to train Rey to have a full understanding and encompassing of the Force, because you can only be as truly powerful in the Force if you embrace both sides of yourself. You cannot be dually pulled in different directions, and I'll actually talk about that a little bit more in my Don't Sleep, because it's about, this book is about Luke, so we'll talk about that a little bit more. And but this, to me,
and this movie is about Luke, and I think that that's a really important, what you're saying is really important here, is that this, they made it very clear in the panel that this movie is about Luke. He is a pivotal part of that. And so it's an interesting idea, because it seems to me he's almost playing dual roles here, in that he's Yoda in one spot, but he's also kind of got an Obi-Wan thing going on here, where it seems like he's planning something, doesn't it? It seems like we're not just going to leave him on world to die like they did Yoda in Empire Strikes Back. So it's a weird kind of mix of what he's going and what he's going to be. And I mean, it's very clear. I mean, what is it Daisy Ridley said? You know, it's difficult for Rey. Don't ever meet your idols. And Rey, you know, doesn't see Luke is not what she expects him to be.
Yep.
It seems like he's very disillusioned. Obviously, Kylo is the reason for that. And so I don't really see where he's going, but I could see a situation where he suffers a similar fate to Obi-Wan at some point in time, even though Han's already done that, right? Han was Obi-Wan in the last movie. He suffers a similar fate. And I'm going to be really interested to see where they go with him after this kind of, you know, the Karate Kid scenes sequence that they're going to have at the beginning.
Well, it looks like if I had to guess, I would bet that Rey and Luke spend almost the entire film on Ahch-To training and talking and you know, really diving into the Force, and they're going to be the emotional heart. You know, Finn and Poe are going to be kind of the action, and then you'll have a lot of Rey and Luke. And then I honestly think the last act of the film is Kylo in the First Order finding Ahch-To and invading. I legitimately, if I had to guess the plot, you see the scenes of Phasma and the stormtroopers walking in, and Poe's X-Wing getting blown up. That's one scene. They invade the Resistance base. They find the map. They spend Hoth 2, basically. They spend most of the film looking for Luke, and the last act of the film is spent. You see that shot of Daisy running with the lightsaber. I think she faces off with Kylo again after having some training. I think you know, the Millennium Falcon is clearly flying, evading TIE fighters on Ahch-To. So I think that last act of the film puts Rey and Luke on the run, leaving Ahch-To after the First Order invades. And so I think it's going... I think Luke survives this film. I would be surprised if he dies, because I think now, especially with Leia being confirmed not in Episode 9, they have to have one of the legacy characters in the third movie. You know, she was going to be the one. So I'd be surprised if Luke died in this film, even though, you know, filming was already completed when Carrie Fisher, you know, passed away. But I do think Luke survives it, and I think the last film is him really coming to terms. I think his heroic sacrifice happens in 9, if I have to put my money on it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's and that's what's good about this trailer, is it didn't really give too much. Another good thing about this trailer is there were some beautiful scenes.
Yes.
In this trailer. I mean, that mountain, that island covered in green early in the shot was really pretty. Those speeders with that red dirt just flying up behind them, like a Brooks and Dunn song. It was that's a Southern reference for you kids. I apologize for that, but that's a I thought that it looked great. It was great. You mentioned Poe and Finn. They almost seem like an afterthought at this point. It almost seems like they're coming up with things for them. I know Finn's supposed to be Han, but it almost seems like they're coming up with things for them to do here, so that they can keep them around for the third one. Doesn't it kind of feel like that to you, and that they're just kind of going to be yeah, over in the background. We're going to have some action with them, maybe some jokes, and then they don't really play much of a role at all in the story.
Yeah, well, you know, if you continue your, you know, your Star Wars lineage,
Empire Strikes Back Part 2, yes.
Well, even Return of the Jedi, though, there was always the Force story and the military story.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the Luke and Rey thing will be the Force story, and I think the Poe, Finn, and this new character Rose is going to be the military story. So I think those are going to be your two A and B plots, like Star Wars always has. You always, you know, in Empire, it was Luke on Dagobah and Han and Leia on the run from the Empire after Hoth. And then in Jedi, it was Endor and the Death Star. So you're going to see that. I think you'll see that continue throughout the rest of the trilogy, whether or not it repeats Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back. It remains to be seen. But I do think... I do think that is, John Boyega said that there's going to be an adventure for Finn and Poe to go on. Like, that's a direct quote from him. And that he's, you know, Finn's tale, he's really trying to find his place. Like, is he going to be a resistance pilot?
Finn's tale sounds like the next Pixar movie.
I would
love
that.
From the company that brought you Finding Nemo and Finding Dory, here is Finn's tale.
It's a spinoff about that shark named Bruce, right?
Yeah.
So no, that's going to be interesting for me to see his coming of age. I hope, I wanted him to be the Force sensitive in this film, so I hope we see a little bit of that. If we don't, it's great. You know, he's still a great character. John Boyega. I texted my wife during the panel. I was like, I want to be John Boyega. Like, yeah. And her response was, I love her to death. I don't blame you at all. So, you know, and then you see, you know, we didn't get a lot of Poe because Oscar Isaac wasn't at the panel. But, you know, you got Kelly Marie Tran, who's playing Rose. And this was one thing that really intrigued me. Rian Johnson was super jazzed about Rose. And so I want to see the part that she plays, because he talked about how when he grew up, the thing that he loved about Star Wars was that you have the idea of just a regular person becoming a hero. And Rose scratched that itch for him to have that in this film. And so she ends up on this adventure with Finn and Poe. You can do that kind of by the transitive property, because, you know, John Boyega said that Finn and Poe went on an adventure, and then Kelly Marie Tran said that she goes on an adventure with Finn. So she's just a maintenance worker on a resistance base that gets blown up, and she ends up on this trip with them. So I'm excited to see that Poe's X-Wing gets blown up again. That guy, she needs to stop painting his X-Wings black so they'll survive one of these days. So I'm really, really interested, but I there's so much, like, I could talk for hours about this trailer and the, you know, in conjunction with the poster. The new poster is fantastic. It's my new
really
phone
cool.
background.
Yeah, it's cool.
Which lends a lot to Rey being the balance of the Force. And really, and this is just me being, you know, going, kicking the can down the road. People have always said that Anakin brought balance to the Force because he brought Luke into the equation. And so Luke is bringing balance to the Force because he's teaching Rey how to actually use the Force properly.
Yeah, and she's his daughter, so.
See, I
really don't think that's true. I just wanted to make a joke. I really, really don't think that's true. But that's, maybe we should have a Star Wars, ooh, this would be fun. Maybe we should have a Star Wars conspiracy theory or a Star Wars a fan theory show, because that'd be fun. Because I spent a lot of time on Mace Windu as Snoke the other day, and I don't think it's true, but it's super fun. So we should have a Star Wars theory. That might be a fun one.
What? Rubber stamp it. One of the books on Luke's bookshelf is Obi-Wan's Lost Diary.
Yep.
There's a whole comic line about him finding Obi-Wan's diary. So
Rey Kenobi.
Yeah, 100%. if she's related to anybody, which I don't want her to be, but if she is, I would bet she's a Kenobi.
Yeah, I'm on that train as well. But we can explore other avenues as well. Maybe Rey Windu, who knows? Maybe Ooh. Rey Windu. All right, so let's get on. You know, I know you could talk about Star Wars forever, and actually you're about to talk about Star Wars some more, so let's just get into it. It's everybody's favorite segment, your grandmother's favorite segment. I'm not sure why, but apparently it is. Don't sleep on it. Gerald, what you got?
Ray, you don't say that with enough conviction.
Because I don't believe it.
Your grandmother's favorite segment, Don't Sleep on It. Now, so I alluded to this before. One of my things for this year, I am trying to up the number of books I read, and I say books with air quotes because I don't read books. I listen to audiobooks. I am the world's slowest reader, and so I listen to audiobooks quite a bit. And one of my things was I want to read, like, two books a month that are, like, good, like, I hesitate to use the word good, but like books that are gonna enrich my life in some way, shape, or
respectable form. For an adult to read.
Yeah, so like I'm listening to like a Malcolm Gladwell book right now because that's super interesting. Outliers.
Oh, that's a great one.
Super interesting. And then so every two of those adulty books I read, I'm going to listen to one of the Star Wars audiobooks because they're good. Like the guy who reads them is great, and they have voice actors that come in and do the other characters, and they have sound effects and music. And so it's honestly more like a radio drama and less like a audiobook. And so I just finished Heir to the Jedi. And Heir to the Jedi is probably one of the weaker installments of the new canon books, but it's interesting because it's written from the first person perspective of Luke Skywalker. And so it's really, really interesting to see that being told because it really talks about how Luke dabbled a lot in the dark side early on, how his earliest usage of the Force was motivated out of fear and anger, two of the key paths to the dark side. And a lot of it has to do with him coming to terms with the fact that you know, his emotions are okay if he uses them in a positive way. And so that, to me, again, is kind of the first inklings of, you know, this different path for the Jedi. And it's just really interesting. Like I said, it's not a great book. You know, if you're into audiobooks, the you know, they have some really good voice actors and the sound effects are cool. So if you're looking for another canon book and you haven't read or listened to Heir to the Jedi, it's good. I would say if you haven't listened to any of them, start with Lords of the Sith, because Lords of the Sith is significantly better, and then go to Tarkin, because Tarkin's also really good. But Heir to the Jedi is good. You know, it's kind of like we talked about earlier with the Marvel universe. It's just one of the lesser entries of a really good thing that's going on. You know, they announced that they've got like 7 or 8 more books coming out this year or into the next couple of years. So I'm going to continue to trudge through them, but Heir to the Jedi, written from the first person perspective of Luke Skywalker, pretty solid stuff. So that is my don't sleep on it.
I'm going to go with something I haven't seen and I also haven't read, but I am oddly excited about it, and that is the New American Gods show, television show from Stars. It's based on an award-winning book by Neil Gaiman, which I am going to be very honest and say I never read. I am, however, broadly aware of the plot line, and I it seems like a very interesting idea, and I have been very excited about the upcoming television adaptation, which starts at the end of this month, simply because of the talent involved. Most notably for me, Ian McShane, who can do no wrong and is just Ian McShaning all over the trailers I have seen for this show. Crispin Glover's in it. I love Crispin Glover, who hasn't been around lately. And so I'm in on that. It was writer Michael Green, who did a lot of stuff with Heroes. So I am in on all of those guys. But more importantly, they've been running these spots during the NBA playoffs, which just look, I mean, they look excellent. They look a lot like another Michael Green project, Kings, which also, by the way, Ian McShane was in.
Fantastic.
Which was great. I'm so upset. I don't know if the writer's strike, I don't know what got Kings, but Kings was great. And I have, by the way, Bucky Brooks was in Kings.
Barnes?
Bucky Barnes. Bucky Brooks.
Sebastian Stan.
Who's Bucky Brooks?
I don't know.
Google that for me for a second. Anyway.
No. I'm not going to Google the random name that came out of your head. My wife uses this computer too, Ray.
That's fair. So Bucky Barnes he's in it. He was in it, Kings. I love Kings. I thought it was good. But anyway, Ian McShane's in it, doing great. There's some extended trailers on YouTube I think you should watch. It looks excellent. I'm just excited about it. I'm really excited about it. I am so excited about it. I am thinking about getting a subscription to Stars. That's how excited I am about the show. I think it looks great. And so I hope you, you know, give it a chance, because I'm pretty excited about it. And The Leftovers just came back on Sunday. My wife and I haven't had a chance to watch it, but let me say, Leftovers season 1, not worth it. You don't even need to know anything about season 1. You will pick it all up in season 2. Season 2 of The Leftovers is great. I'm looking forward to season 3. So I will probably be talking about The Leftovers in a Don't Sleep in the very, very near future. But that's it for us. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please rate and review wherever you find us. It helps other people find the show. We appreciate it. I'm on Twitter at RM Summerlin. He's on Twitter at GH Goodridge. We are together on Twitter at Two Woke Nerds. Please follow us. And until next time, stay woke.
Stay woke.